round table on Crick Info Talk.
Hello and welcome to Crick and Bo's Roundtable. On the agenda today, the state of English cricket, in particular the state of the England cricket team. It's only 3 years since they were riding the crest of a wave, winning the Ashes at the end of a run of 6 consecutive series victories. Since then, it's all been a little bit downhill for England. They're now in New Zealand, struggling to avoid their third series defeat in a row. And with me today to discuss where they're at are two fine colleagues. We've got Michael Atherton and David Lloyd. Thank you very much, gentlemen. If I could just open up with some general points about where you believe England are. Let's start with you, Michael.
I think about a mid-ranking side in the one-day game. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about England's one-day team, a lot of areas that they've yet to sort out. Who's going to be their spinner? Have they got a spinner in one-day cricket? Can they find an opening combination that can take the game to the opposition and exploit the power play overs? So in one-day cricket, I think they've got a lot of questions to ask. I think the Test match team is more settled, but the performances have been a little bit up and down. Prime concern for me is the fast bowling resources. At the heart of England's great rise to the Ashes triumph in 2005 was that quartet of top-class fast bowlers, bowling at somewhere between 85 and 90 miles an hour, either swinging the new ball in Matthew Hoggard's case or reverse swinging the old ball. And at the moment, I think there's an absence of pace and quality in the fast bowling resources, and basically good test match teams have good fast bowlers. The batting looks solid and in terms of personnel, and they all average over 40, but they're not necessarily putting the returns on the board, and some of those players, if they look carefully at their performances over the last 12-18 months, you'd see a trend that's downwards rather than upwards. So I think there are some questions to answer in the test match team, but that looks more settled than the one day team.
Yeah, I think Test team, I wouldn't be that worried. And I know that since 2005 we've been on a downward scale, and I think we're fifth in the ICC rankings at the minute. But the fast bowlers that are coming through, and it always is a concern to produce fast bowlers, I don't think we're too bad. And I know we'll be going back to players that have played previously, and under Duncan Fletcher we saw Plunkett and Mahmood, and you could argue that they were a little bit early. But there is great potential from those two. There's a lad called Graham Onions up at Durham who's doing pretty well in county cricket and may get his chance. And Stephen Finn, who's only 19 years of age but 6'8" down at Middlesex. So I think this is an emerging team at test match level. Michael Vaughan would say that he's excited by the prospects of this team. I refuse to believe that this top six will continue to underachieve. They're the best players. I think they're the best players by a distance in English county cricket in the batting lineup. And Ambrose has come into the side, and at New Zealand he started well, and in the second test match had a pretty iffy time behind the stumps, but he looks an adequate batsman, if not better than that. So they should settle that test match team. One day cricket, very briefly, I think we're miles away, absolutely miles away in know-how, in confidence, in mobility, all these things. We seem to be second best against opposition, and that again is reflected in our ranking. I think we're seventh in that, just above Bangladesh and West Indies, so you know we're pretty ordinary in that.
Well, let's just pick up on that bowling point you just mentioned, because obviously last test at Hamilton was a bit of a watershed for England. They lost very embarrassingly by 189 runs, and of course got rid of two of their senior bowlers, Matthew Hoggard and Steve Harmison. From what we've seen so far at Wellington, do you think it's the start of a new era, as Michael Vaughan was suggesting?
I don't think it's the end of Matthew Hoggard, or I'd be surprised if he never played for England again. At 31, you can argue that perhaps he's reached the plateau and just on the other side, but I think he's still got a lot to offer, in particular in terms of attitude. I think you'll see Matthew Hoggard trying to fight his way back in, and it only takes an injury to a faster bowler and Hoggard comes back in, and if he does well, he could still play for a year or two. Stephen Harmison is more problematic because the problems have been longer term. We've seen it over 2 or 3 years. I wouldn't get carried away with what we've seen here. I think the bowlers have bowled well, Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Ryan Sidebottom in particular, but I think it's been quite a helpful deck in Wellington. And looking at the type of bowlers that they are, I think they need a bit of help in the deck. I think when we get on a flatter pitch, England will find it harder. So I wouldn't go overboard yet just on one performance, but I think there's certainly promising signs. Stuart Broad looks like a coming cricketer to me, and I think he's a cricketer that the England selectors have to have a lot of faith in. I think there's bags of improvement to come. Hopefully a bit more pace to come, but I like what I see in terms of his bowling. I like what I see in terms of his attitude. He obviously can hold a bat as well, which helps, because England have been looking for that number 8 position from a bowler for some time. So he's definitely one that should be penciled in for the medium term.
Yeah, I'm not writing either of them off, Hoggard or Harmison. The penny will drop with players and with the management that they need better preparation. Sir Richard Hadlee has a lot to say. Sometimes you need to listen, and he said that before a test match he needed 130 overs precisely under his belt to be in good rhythm, to get his muscles working, to get his direction right. The penny hasn't dropped with three of our boys that you cannot just rock up to a test match and run out and bowl. It just doesn't happen that way. So I would expect the pair of them to roll the sleeves up, Hoggard and Harmison, in the English domestic season and play for the counties and bowl a lot of overs, get some confidence and get some rhythm, and then they'll challenge him for a place again. So I'd be quite excited at what we've got right now. And the other thing on that is that they'll only get experience by bowling in test matches. And they talk about Monty Panesar as well, and he can't do this and he doesn't do that, but you know, leave him alone. 24 test matches, he's got a damn good record, and he will work things out for himself. So I'm still very optimistic about the test team, and I hope that the two lads who've been dropped out, and that's about, how many is it, 460 wickets roundabout, test match wickets, who've gone out of the side, say, okay, well, I'm going to get my place back.
Do you think we are seeing a bit of a flip side of the central contracts issue? Because I know you, Michael, were a big fan of them when they came in, because they provided the stability that that you both didn't have in the 1990s at the end of that decade. But, I mean, looking at the batting, we've got these top six who all do just enough but don't quite go on, and the bowlers aren't quite match fit. Is there a bit of stagnation caused by having people in a squad but not playing regularly?
Well, there's no doubt that central contracts were a good and positive thing for English cricket. Throughout the 1990s, most other teams were fully professional in that sense and had overtaken England. So we did need them, but you need to strike a balance between security, if you like, and creating a nice team atmosphere and team ethos, but keeping players hungry. I think hunger is an absolutely vital part of a good team dynamic. You want a number of players pushing from behind, and B, you don't want those players in the team to feel untouchable or undroppable. Now, whether they've got that balance quite right between stability, security and hunger, I'm not quite sure. But there's no doubt that central contracts are a good thing and should be extended.
I've just got a theory about central contracts. I think there should be more players, more than 12, and that might be a financial issue for the ECB. But my theory is that the players who are in the 12 are playing with a bit of fear at going out of it, because their earnings will plummet if they come out of that central contract situation. So I don't think the ECB are quite there in the management of central contracts. And I think we'd both say that, yeah, there should be a basic fee, but the top up should be if you play. It'd be more incentive driven, I think, would ease the situation, because I have this theory that the top six batters are in fear of losing the place.
Well, and with the greatest respect, you were both involved with a time for English cricket that was not very successful in terms of results. And from what we're seeing here, England are on the verge of, well, possibly they're going to turn the series around, but they've lost a couple of series. They've been woeful away from home. Can you see a comparison, or is it impossible to compare between eras given what England have been through since your time?
Well, I don't like comparing between eras, because I can't quite see the point of it. In terms of where England are now, I'd say that we're quite some way short of being the best in the world. Equally, we're not at the bottom of the pile. I believe we're in that kind of mid-ranking position where two or three or four teams can all beat each other on a given day. Now, England are striving to be better than that. Fundamentally, I believe, and I've always believed, that in order for that to happen, there have to be some change, more fundamental changes to the way cricket is structured in England. But that's an age-old argument, one that I've been kind of banging on about now for far too long, and I'm not sure cricket info readers want to be bored by it either. But I do believe that the fundamentals are not quite right, but that we're still producing decent cricketers, and that when things click, when you get a captain coach combination, as with Fletcher and Vaughan, and when you get a bunch of fast bowlers who can stay fit and operate together, as happened in 2005, then England have got the chance of beating the best. But I don't see that being consistently possible with the way that English cricket is governed.
But do you think the expectations, David, are higher of England these days, especially given what they achieved not so long ago?
Oh yeah, I think that they captured the public imagination in 2005, and since then they've been downhill. But I think that this team, the England team that we've got, is going the right way. And I know that a couple of results have been very frustrating, and I thought they were very poor in Sri Lanka. I was there all the time and didn't play with much know-how. But looking at the personnel, I think they're going the right way. We'll always have peaks and troughs, and I'll probably agree with Michael that the structure that we've got in England is not going to be consistent in producing international cricketers, and I think that is not going to help with what's happening in world cricket right now. You know, the ECB will need to be really strong and clear thinking in how our cricket is going to go in the next few years, the next decade or so. But, you know, again, that's for another programme and another issue, to see where the ECB will take English cricket. There's an email just going round that it would appear that there's going to be more 2020 cricket. Well, that's telling you that the counties are just looking at their own revenue rather than the bigger picture of what's best for the England international cricket team.
And let's just pick up on a point you raised there, Michael, about the captain-coach dynamic. You mentioned how good it was between Fletcher and Vaughan. We're coming up to a year into the Peter Moores era. What do you make of his reign so far?
Well, in terms of pure results, it's been in and out. I wouldn't say we've seen a consistent improvement, but equally there have been signs that he's doing some good things. I found it very difficult to get a real handle on what Peter Moores is about, in the sense that he says all the right things at press conferences. He's a very personable, approachable chap. But I haven't really yet got a grip to what he's bringing to the England team. Whether he's bringing just an overarching management position, and he'll bring his specialists in like Otis Gibson and Andy Flower, and he's just creating a good environment for the players to flourish. And whether Michael Vaughan is really the main voice during test matches, I think it's still difficult to say. And I'd like to, over the next year, certainly as he kind of grows into the role, I'd really like to get a grip on what Peter Moores is bringing. But it's almost been a fuzzy start. You know, you can't really criticise, because England haven't been that bad, but equally there's been nothing obvious, I think, that you could say, well, this is what the coach is bringing to the setup. So I think he's under pressure. I think the next few test matches, this series in New Zealand, the home series against New Zealand, perfect opportunity for him to get some results on the board. But if England don't, I think there'll be one or two questions asked.
He talks all the time about we are building a team, and there's always that mystique about coaches, and you can look at Duncan Fletcher and everybody would say it was I'm building a team. John Bracewell in New Zealand, I will be saying this about the team and selecting the team. I think Peter Moores, as Michael says, creates an environment for the players to play. He unclutters things. He wants players to have ownership of what they're doing, not to rely on lots of other people. He brings specialist coaches in, and I think he's got two excellent specialist coaches. His bowling coach, Otis Gibson, and Andy Flower. That's a really good appointment. But he will create the atmosphere for the players to play. And I'm a big believer, and with him sat next to me, that I was coach at the time, I would never dream of saying to him, declare now. He just hit me. You know, it's the captain's job. That's what he does. The captain leads the team. He leads his players. And certainly in my time, they would be looking at the captain. What are we going to do, Skip? Rather than look at the coach. But in recent era, I would suggest that there would be a look at Duncan Fletcher. And definitely with New Zealand, it's a look at John Bracewell. I think Peter Moores is a step away from that. I would say this. I think he's very impressive. I like Peter Moores. He definitely needs some results.
Okay, well, let's look more closely at the captain now, because with English cricket in the last 20 years, it's been a fairly consistent cycle of 4 or 5 years. I believe you were 5, Graham Gooch was 4, Nasser Hussain survived 4, and obviously Michael's had his injuries, he was out for a while, but he's coming up for 5 years in the job. Is that possibly the end of his span?
I wouldn't say so. I've always felt that there is a limited shelf life for a captain, particularly in English cricket, because it's a difficult job in the sense that usually results are not always going your way. Secondly, the peculiar nature of the English media, I think, puts a lot of pressure on the team and the captain in the sense that there are, 15 national newspapers or something, so there's always stuff going on and around. So it's not an easy job. What Michael Vaughan has got going for him is a great deal of credibility, because he's an Ashes winning captain. He's also a wonderful player when he's playing at his best, and I still think he's a good player now. All right, he's not as young as he was, and he's had one or two injuries, but I think we saw last summer when he gets a run in the team, his batting can still be as fluent and as good as ever. He's an Ashes winning captain. There aren't too many of those around in English cricket, and I think that gives him a tremendous amount of credit in the bank, if you like, to take him through one or two tough times. I think it's perfectly fine at the moment. I don't have a problem with the split captains. I've long been a believer that you should have your best captain for each form of the game, and so I'm perfectly happy with the Paul Collingwood Michael Vaughan situation right now, and I don't see why that can't continue for a while yet.
There's just natural wastage, isn't there, with captains? There's a shelf life, and call it what you like, but age creeps up and injuries, and Michael will know about captaining the side and having injuries. Michael Vaughan has been out with injuries. He said that he wants to go on for 2 or 3 years. I think he's a very impressive man, and he's a very honest man. He's a good character, and he's excited about the team that he's got. The team at Wellington, he says, has got energy, and he wants to take it forward along with Moores. So, it was a couple of years, and if you look at this team, the exact team for Wellington, you could say, well, if they kept these together, they'll all be in the swim of things for the next Ashes series. They're all young enough, and Vaughan is the eldest player, and so he's got a decent set of chaps with him. He's got ambition to captain England further, and that counts. I just think it's as long as his knee, which is a bit troublesome, how long that will hold up for.
Mind you, how difficult is it to rebuild a side from scratch? I mean, he had this wonderful side he thought he was going to take to who knows what heights, and then suddenly he himself is cut down, the team itself falls to pieces. It must be a tough job to try and rebuild from scratch like that.
Yeah, it's a question I put to him on the eve of this series, really, in another interview, in the sense that it's not as easy as a football manager, because a football manager can just buy a centre forward for 30 million. Alex Ferguson has built 4 different teams at Manchester United that have gone on to win big trophies, and that's an impressive achievement, but he does have the advantage of not having to just pick players who are born in Manchester or live in Manchester. He can go out and buy a team. Now, obviously a cricket captain, a cricket coach can't do that, but in a sense that makes it more of a challenge and more interesting. I think the key thing for Michael Vaughan is the desire. You do empathise with players of a certain group, and Michael Vaughan will have a very special bond with the team that won that Ashes in 2005, with the likes of Trescothick and Flintoff, who are no longer here. A, does he have the desire to do that again and the drive? B, as an elder statesman with a slightly different relationship to some of these young players, can he find the same empathy with this lot that he found with the 2005 series? I don't think anybody can answer those questions. They are question marks to be answered or otherwise by him over the next year or two.
Well, there's that F factor, isn't it? We've gone through an interview and we've not really mentioned Andrew Flintoff and what an integral part of England's team he was in 2005. And can he come back? And if he comes back mid-summer and he's able to bowl at 90 miles an hour, I think England have the makings of an excellent team. And Vaughan will be looking at that. We've talked about Vaughan's injuries, and that is a big question mark. Will Flintoff come back into this team? If he does, and he's anything like, I think England will have a cracking side.
And if he doesn't, what can England do to try and move on? Because all through the 1980s into the 1990s, we had Ian Botham hanging over the side. Is Flintoff going to hang over the team for evermore?
Well, not to the same extent as Botham, I don't think, because if you put the records of the two cricketers side by side, well, there really is no comparison. Andrew Flintoff hit form at exactly the right time. But if you look at his record all told, then it doesn't bear comparison with Ian Botham's. English cricket, if Andrew Flintoff's not around and he's not fit, we'll just have to move on. There's no way around it. You either have got an all-rounder capable or you haven't, and if you haven't, you have to do the best with what you've got. Ideally, you want a world-class all-rounder. because it helps tremendously with the balance of the side. And I think those close to Flintoff still believe that he can get back and play for England for a number of years yet. His physiotherapist was out here during the break between the one day series and the test match series and was sounding fairly optimistic about all this. I have my doubts whether he can be the bowler he was, both the age that he is and the injuries that he's had, and I think desire is a key part of Andrew Flintoff as well. But if he comes back, all well and good. If he doesn't, well, England will have to move on.
We must start to wrap it up now, but just one more point I'd like to pick up. Michael Vaughan has been mentioning all through the series about England's low confidence among the batting. And Michael, you managed to bring a side through that never really had a lot of confidence in the side. What is it that you need to score those centuries that have been missing for England all through this winter, really?
Well, I think you can get too wrapped up in hundreds. It's becoming an issue, and the more that you bang on about an issue and the more that you think about it, the more of a problem it can become sometimes. You will go through games and patches where players don't get 100. In this particular game at Wellington, although we had one, it wasn't from a batsman, Tim Ambrose, but it's the kind of pitch where a batsman might never feel quite in on, even if you've got 50 or 60, and the type of pitch where wickets fall in clusters. So I wouldn't get too hung up on the hundreds issue. I was disappointed with the way England batted in the second innings. At lunchtime, 250 ahead with 9 wickets in hand in the second innings. A confident side would have really rammed home the advantage, and England batted tentatively. And I think that's just as a result of the performances and the results that the side have had over the last 12, 18 months. But somehow they've got to get that confidence back, because good teams are dominant teams and they keep poking the opposition in the chest and asking questions of them. And England, at the moment, are just a little bit too timid.
Well, I think Kevin Peterson is going to take somebody to the cleaners. He's been quiet for a little while now. I think there has been this fear in the top six, and there's also something else to consider, that the top six may feel that the next 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 are not trustworthy. They don't get many runs, and that might play on them. I mentioned the word fear. I think they can play with a lot more arrogance than they do. I was there throughout Sri Lanka, and I think sometimes the game plans are completely up the spout, just to sit in and go 1.5 and 2 and over, whereas a few years ago they were talking about the Australian style of 3.5 and 4 and over. I would be very optimistic in think that they're going to come really good. Ian Bell, talk about him, lovely player, he really is a stylish player. He's about to explode for me. I think there's a lot of runs going to come from Bell and Peterson. You know, the ego, the arrogance, well, he'll take somebody to the cleaners. And they're trying to get Strauss back into the team, and he's sort of treading carefully at the minute, but he is a class player, but he will need to score runs. I'm so optimistic, I think they'll be fine. Cook is a bloody good player, he is a really good player. I'm an optimist, I think they're going to come good.
Well, there we have it. England are in the doldrums at the moment, but the future isn't all doom and gloom, according to our experts, Michael Atherton and David Lloyd. Thank you very much, gentlemen. You've been listening to Cricketers Roundtable.
This is Cricketinfo Talk.